Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer, not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Welcome to the show. Today, the mystical power of the adaptogens, what this really means. I don't do a lot of show on herbs, and the reason is, certainly not because I don't use them, certainly not because I don't passionately believe in them, but because I think the context in which most people are taught about herbs, that being the average civilian, I think fails to do herbal medicine a justice. And by that I mean that usually the public is given a notion that what you do is take your symptom and then do a little search on which herbs can help your symptom. And I'm not knocking that. I don't want to say that I'm knocking it. It's just that in my experience over 20 years, often that doesn't work. I've consistently, despite being associated with, I think, some of the great herbalists of present day or nutritionists, I think by and large, all too often, I think there's a more profound, simple, and yet complex at the same time answer to how does the average public understand the way they're supposed to use herbs. Now, certainly in 60 minutes, I can't do even a hundredth of the gamut of knowledge required to kind of get a sense of this. So what I've done today is I've picked one type of herb, an herb called an adaptogen. And I don't mean an herbal product named adaptogen. I mean a group of herbs called adaptogens. So when you hear the names of herbs like ginseng and reishi and deer antler and cordyceps and ashwagandha and royal jelly and rhodiola and maca and fleece flower and so on and so forth, it's herbs like that that we've given this sort of catch-all phrase called adaptogens. And what an adaptogen is, well, there's a lot of opinions about what that actually means, but when herbs stress that they have benefits that are in the long and high numbers, there's dozens of benefits to these herbs, from increasing your stamina, to enhancing your ability to withstand stress, to improving sexual function, to boosting immunity. I think some of you know what I'm talking about. These herbs generally are catchphrased into the term adaptogen or adaptogenic herbs. Now, of course, on the pictures on the website, I've got more in-depth explanations. So if you're new to the show, please, if you can, get to the website. I teach these conceptual shows in one-hour segments. We've got 301 of them on my website, and that's at straighttalk.cc, not .com, but .cc, and that's Straight Talk with two T's. So if you can get to the pictures, please do, because I can explain so much more with the pictures. If you're driving or multitasking and you can't, please, when you can, listen to the show again. These shows are designed to listen to them more and more. And the increase in the number of times you hear the show, I guarantee you, you'll hear things you didn't hear the first time. These shows are designed like a complex web. And that's because these topics run deep. So we'll give you a shot today at the mystical power of the adaptogens. Traditionally, we're interested in reishi, ginseng, deer antler, cordyceps, ashwagandha, because in the folklore, in the alchemy, in the long history of these herbs, they're supposed to confer to the user these incredible benefits, almost miraculous turnarounds in health, or in terms of anti-aging, or the return of sexual function, or mental powers, connection with God on levels that without that herb you just couldn't have, so on and so forth, that in the folklore, we call it folklore. I'm going to challenge that. But in the fabled traditions over hundreds of years of the uses of these groups of herbs, is the potential that the user will have conferred to them, bestowed to them, these special, special benefits like no other herb. So you can talk about milk thistle, and you can talk turmeric, and you can talk about garlic, and you can talk about cayenne. Those are not adaptogenic herbs. Now, there's a gentleman, an herbalist. He's in his 70s now. His name's Ron Teagarden. Some of you know that name. I learned from him years ago, amongst quite a list of herbalists over 20-something years. But Ron Teagarden had a slant on it that I thought was fascinating. It certainly fascinated me. I was in my mid-20s when I started studying with him. And Teagarden's notion was that the adaptogenic herbs, the reishis, the ginsengs, the deer antlers, the cordyceps, the ashwagandhas, the macas, the rhodiolas, so on and so forth, that if you really knew what you were doing with those herbs, and you did some other things, which we'll get into in a moment, that if you combined into your health practice the use of these adaptogenic herbs, well, then your health would just exist on another level, and the rest of herbal medicine, well, it really wasn't quite that important then. Not that it wasn't important, but it really wasn't where, if you were interested in radiant health, you should be putting your time, energy, and money. Because if you could make relationship, if you could adapt your physiology to the deep higher benefits of the adaptogenic herbs, well, then you could have incredible levels of health. So in the folklore, in the tradition, in the way Ron Teagarden often taught it, that if you planned on living to 120 years old, having all your marbles intact, siring children until you were 100, it would behoove you to get some understanding and develop some relationship with the adaptogenic herbs. And of course, any of you who have dabbled with the adaptogens know the incredible diversity in the commercial market, the span of these herbs from, well, you can pick up ginseng at your local 7-Eleven on the front counter, Korean ginseng, for $1 a bottle. I've personally seen small amounts of ginseng sold for as much as $20,000 cash, a stalk of ginseng for $20,000 to $30,000. Growing up in New York's Chinatown, there was always going to acupuncture school in New York City, watching Ron Teagarden years ago do his amazing thing with herbs. You would see people come in and buy stalks of ginseng for $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000. And then if you talk to the older herbalists, whether they were American like Teagarden or Asian, Chinese, etc., if you really talk to the guys that use these things, I mean extensively, you'd bear testimony to the fact that these things are sold like gold. And if then you study them just from the standpoint of science, you start to get a sense of why they're sold like gold. So welcome to the mystical power of the adaptogens, what this really means. And why do I give it this title? Because the folklore or the history of these herbs says that if you know what you're doing with these herbs, plan on living to 200 years old. Plan on living to 300 years old. Plan on being fertile at 100. Plan on looking 40 years old when you're 100 years old. And of course, like modern man, modern scientific, technologically oriented man tends to do, we kind of chuckle at these things and go, well, they must be worth something. They just might make me feel a little better. I guess I'll give it a whirl. It comes well referenced or well recommended by the local herbalist or by the radio host or whoever. And we're going to give these things a whirl. And then when we hear in the marketing of these herbs that, well, that guy that lived to 200 in China so many years ago, he was cultivating his own reishi and he was picking his own wild herbs and he swore by the special blend of these magical mushrooms or whatever he was doing, the old beekeeper, beekeepers have a tradition of living well into their late 90s. And of course, there's this notion that that beekeeper is cultivating his hive, knows all the secrets, knows how not to cut corners, and his royal jelly is conferring to him something unknown to modern science. This is the folklore around the herb. The question becomes, what does this mean to you? How do you stand on it? How much money are you going to spend? You're going to go out and buy yourself a $10,000 stalk of ginseng tomorrow? All right. Hopefully you can get to the website so you can see some of these pictures. Okay, an adaptogenic herb. Number one, often it's going to connect to your glandular system. It's going to do something for the glands. For instance, deer antler. When we say deer antler, we have to distinguish between deer antler velvet and deer antler. Those are two different herbs. One is the fuzz on the baby antler. That fuzz is kind of shaved off, and that gives you deer antler velvet. This is different than the actual horn of the stag, ground up after it falls off, ground up, no, the animals are not harmed, but ground up and turned into tincture or powder or whatever. But when you're talking deer antler, we know because we've studied it. You know, science, as it sells these things to the American public, science studies them. Of course, the mistake, and I'll argue this later, is that once science studies it, science thinks it understands it. I can tell you, coming at this from all angles over two decades, meaning trying to understand the science, trying to understand the Eastern medicine behind it. See, a Chinese medical doctor, meaning someone who has studied Chinese medicine and herbology, is going to use the herb with a completely different mindset than a scientist who owns an herbal company that suggests that you use the herbs this way. You're going to get two different uses. And yeah, they'll overlap, but they're still going to be very, very different. And then the third group that's going to see it very differently are people who use it. In other words, clinicians, doctors of sorts, herbalists, who are going to use the herb to help people. And then you're going to get a difference between those using the herb to help people who are healthy and help people who are sick. So you got to qualify. But one mistake science makes all too often is it goes in, it writes complicated books on the pharmacology of these herbs. And in fact, we don't understand beans about them. I would spend my money listening to a great Chinese herbalist any day over an American or any scientist. Because the scientists are only tapping in to the smallest part of the chemistry of the herbs. And as we've unfolded the science behind the herbs over the last two, three, four decades, we found that the science, we don't even have the science to understand these things. Which leads us then to question whether or not the folklore of the herb, claiming that the herb could bestow incredible benefits, could make you live to 150, 200 years old in radiant health. Well, if we don't know the science, how can we limit then the potential of the herb? Perhaps it's not folklore. Perhaps there was some ecosystem in which these herbs were grown. Perhaps there's some internal discipline, some internal health practice that accommodates these herbs, that opens up special chemical force within the herb, that science leaves out when it studies it. Things to think about. But in general, an adaptogen is going to go after and try to create some relationship within the endocrine system, your glandular system. So deer antler, we know, will increase the growth, increase the rate of secretion, production of growth hormone, HGH, human growth hormone, which now, of course, we synthesize biochemically. We synthesize it in the lab and inject it into you. That's what we do. When deer antler's been studied, and clearly deer antler velvet will enhance the rate at which you make your human growth hormone. That's, again, a hormone stimulated by an adaptogen. Now, cordyceps, the fabled cordyceps, we're going to get into that in a little more detail in a moment. Cordyceps greatly enhances adrenal repair. So if you think cordyceps, you think adrenals. If you think deer antler, you think human growth hormone. If you think ashwagandha, you think thyroid, you think immune system, and you also think adrenals. But my point is not to have you in this show learn 50 new herbs. You can do that on YouTube. That's not what my show is about. My show is about giving you conceptual understandings so you can learn a perspective upon which you can grow the use of the herb in your body. Perspective. What we're missing today is not data. You can do data acquisition off the internet easily and find out which symptom and which herb and which species. But to think like a clinician, to piece together your health history and your needs as it relates to, in this today's show, the adaptogens, well, that's what you can't find on the internet. So, in adaptogen, I've listed a bunch. Generally, they have some stimulatory or repair effect on the hormonal system. In adaptogen, you're going to hear anti-stress. You're going to hear boosted immunity. You're going to hear repair of the glandular systems. You're going to hear that it makes it just, you have a more calm, clear memory, that you can adapt to frustrating situations with greater ease, that your concentration is enhanced. They're all, or at least most of your adaptogens, are going to make a claim that it enhances longevity. And there's hundreds of adaptogens. What hits the market is only a small percentage of the adaptogens, and probably the more fabled and legioned adaptogens are what hit the market. It's much easier to find reishi at your local health food store than it is fleece flower. All right. Another adaptogen, and I'll use examples off these different herbs today. Reishi. I want to talk about reishi. Now, reishi is an interesting story. Yes, it's one of those herbs that does everything. It's got 50 benefits. And yes, in terms of legend, the old guy cultivating reishi, meaning going into the forest to find wild reishi, preparing it with other herbs and special concoctions, lives to 200 years old. Fathers, children at 100. Reishi was studied by a guy named Fumiko Morishiki. So if you're on the website, go to picture number 8. If you're on the website, go to picture number 8. Fukimi Morishiki was born in Japan in 1925. He took his MD in 1961. Since 1967, he's been chief surgeon in a hospital to prevent serum hepatitis in blood transfused patients. He's administered large dosages of vitamin C. So Morishiki studied vitamin C. He's a non-fellow resident at the Linus Pauling Institute. He was a colleague, a friend, a respected colleague of Linus Pauling. Linus Pauling, as you know, one of the great scientists of our century. Both Linus Pauling and Morishiki studied vitamin C. Morishiki studied red reishi. And he studied red reishi because he went into the villages. Again, this is where science needs to submit. Morishiki went into the villages and met people who he confirmed had terminal cancers, who took reishi, who prepared teas of reishi, and who completely healed their cancers. Now, you hear this kind of garbage everywhere. There's always somebody touting an herb that knows somebody that took the herb, and I can tell you for a fact, 95% of that is garbage. It's just sales, it's just sensationalism, it's just nonsense. It's such a travesty. However, at the same time, if you study herbal medicine, you will find people who were very sick, who made concoctions of very good herbs and who had complete healings. And from time to time, you'll find very credentialed doctors of sorts. In this case, Morishige was a medical doctor and a respected one and a highly acclaimed one. And when these guys come out and say, listen, I know X and X and X, and they were dying of cancer, and they took this mushroom, and their cancer cured. That's the kind of stuff that gets the medical community interested, not the mainstream, of course. But that's the kind of thing that will start to draw the attention of credentialed, sincere, passionate scientists and doctors from all different fields to study and see whether these things are actually true and what we can do with them. Well, Morishige was one of them. So let's talk about red reishi. And again, what I'm going to say about reishi, you can apply to any of those herbs. This is about conceptual understandings. First of all, when Morishige is studying the benefits bestowed upon people with cancer taking the reishi, the question is, what is the quality of reishi? Does this mean you go off to your local GNC or Whole Foods and buy someone's reishi? And of course, some of you are wise enough to know that you would never do that. One thing about the adaptogens, if you can, is you start with the wild forms. If you can get them, if you can find them, if you can trust your source, you start with the wild forms. And of course, unfortunately, our dwindling ecosystem limits the production of these things. There is less and less habitat today where you can actually harvest red reishi. Now, the reality of that and what your marketers will tell you can also differ. Why? Because what the marketers are going to do, what the commercial producers of red reishi, those in the greenhouses, etc., are going to do is sell you on the notion that the ecosystems are dwindling. Now, that's not a hard sell, is it? To tell the American public that the natural resources of the world are dwindling, it's not difficult to convince them of that. Just look out the window. Once done, then you can make a case for your greenhouse, you see, where you've got acres and acres of greenhouses and you're growing this particular mushroom or whatever. You're growing it and you're doing almost as good a job in abundance at a cheaper price. And of course, then you take your commercially grown reishi, not the wild reishi that you might otherwise be climbing up a mountainside to pick, but you basically claim that you have your reishi grown under specific circumstances that you can control, temperatures, humidity, fertilization, so on and so forth. And because you're a master of that product, you study it pharmacologically before you put it in a bottle and sell it. That's a good sell. But I got to tell you, it doesn't work. It's better than nothing. But I'm here to tell you today, the first place you start, and if you study the doctors who make claims for these, so if you study the people in Western society that Western society tends to trust, they're always studying the effect of the wild herb in the ecosystems where the herb is grown. So they go in and they do the medical anthropology, and that stimulates interest. And then on the back of the medical anthropology, some company piggybacks its claims. Now, that's not quite kosher, because there really is a far cry. I wish this wasn't true, but there is a far cry from wild reishi and the best reishi grown in the best greenhouse with the best grower and the best scientists looking to simulate it. We haven't figured out how to duplicate nature yet. And it's, I think, in some sense, I think it's admirable we try. It may be an absolute necessity that we try. We're going to talk about cordyceps in a minute. Try finding wild cordyceps today. Good luck. So it's admirable that we try. But you see, then it gets confusing, because then when you look at the results of these things, reishi can cure cancer. Reishi's effect on the immune system, reishi's effect on the anti-aging systems. Those studies are done off the wild mushroom. And that's the point. Okay, So we're talking about wild reishi now, and we're saying that you've got to source it correctly. Well, in the case of reishi, you've got an interesting scenario where one, if you found it wild, your next question, and this is true of all the herbs, how would you prepare it? What would you do with it? Would you take wild reishi and boil it as a tea? Would you take wild reishi and dry it as a capsule? Dry it to a powdered form. Dry it and grind it. Would you take wild reishi, put it in alcohol, ferment it until the bacteria just digest it, make a tincture of it, and apply it that way? And the point to you is, well, would you take the reishi and compress it into a tablet? The question to you is, after you source it, what is the mode of ingestion? And that's also a critical component of the effect. Generally, the tinctures are the best. And again, there's exceptions to this. There's some herbs you can't really tincture correctly. There's some herbs you can't dry. There's all sorts of little specifics built in, but you can get reishi any way you want. You can boil reishi as a tea. You can even inject these herbs. The Chinese, after 1949, that started studying Chinese medicine with the hard science, decided the smartest way to get the herb in was to inject it in. Bypass all the issues of assimilation through the digestive tract or otherwise, and simply inject it in. And sometimes it was better to inject it in. But generally speaking, you have to make a decision, and my recommendation would be first, get the tincture. Next, get the tea. Next, get the powder. And never do the capsule. So if you can get a wild source as a tincture, if you could get a wild red reishi tincture, you are way ahead of the game. The guy that sells that, and I think he's fairly reputable, is Ron Teagarden. He sells wild red reishi. He sells a number of reishis in tinctured forms. And although I don't know the deep secrets of his company, I can tell you from knowing him, and I can tell you over the years from using it, that that's a reputable reishi. And I would go to that before I'd go to GNC or Whole Foods or so on and so forth and just pick anything off the shelf that's got a pretty cover. You would be amazed at the amount of marketing that goes into the sale of the herb and the minimum amount of science or quality that goes into the sale of the herb. You would be amazed. I've been close enough. I'd have the privilege of being close enough to how these things are done to see the vast amounts of energy that are given to how you sell the herb versus how you import or get an herb that has quality. But that's human nature. You know, buyer beware. Okay. Next thing, the claims about the herb, whether you're talking about reishi or ginseng or cordyceps or soma or royal jelly, the claims made about the herbs. First of all, you have to distinguish when you read the claims. You know, people say, you know, I understand what these herbs are doing. I've done my web search. Somehow research has equated with doing a Google search. I think we're getting smart. I mean, we've got this thing now about fake news. You know, 10 years, no one was saying fake news. 90% of what you read was still garbage 10 years ago. But the public off the internet hadn't caught up to the notion that about 90% of your stuff is fake. There are vast amounts of information on the internet that are fake. Somehow, when we apply it to herbalism or health, somehow, it just hasn't caught up to people. And so people generally, they'll go online and they'll do their research, their due diligence, and they'll collect data. And of course, that data is their research. That data is not research. That data is just data. Thinking with it, to get closer to the truth is what you call research. When you're studying the benefits of an herb, you have to make a distinction between in vitro and in vivo. In vitro and in vivo. You can say this herb stimulates the immune system and kills fungus, or kills bacteria, or kills virus. In a test tube, or in a petri dish, that's called in vitro with a T. In vivo means it kills it in the human body, or at least it kills it in animal bodies. It kills it in some living organism as close to Homo sapien as possible, so that it suggests that in a living organism, the herb is worth what the claim says the herb is worth. These are two massive distinctions. And when you just get on there and do your YouTube searches or your Google searches, and you read about the benefit of an herb, or you put herbs to help fatigue, herbs to help insomnia, herbs to boost the immune system, herbs that fight cancer, herbs that cure arthritis. Anytime you're running searches like this, what's coming up isn't going to give you the distinction between the two. If your notion of applying herbal medicine to your symptom goes no further than saying, well, I've got arthritis, why don't I get 10 herbs that are claimed to help arthritis and take them all in some synergistic combination referred by someone I kind of trust, and there's my shot at it. No, don't do that. I can assure you, this is not the way to fly. Well, maybe I'm wrong. So if you did it and that worked, God bless you. But if it didn't work, let me tell you why. It didn't work because when you do these searches, or when you listen to the power of herb number A, like reishi, to help your concentration, you have to consider whether that study is done in vivo or in vitro. So you have to go into the scientific texts. And that's where you don't want to go, because that's where you're going to have big words that you don't understand, that you're going to look up. You may spend an hour trying to get through a paragraph. And all in all, you'll just shrug your shoulders and say, I'll just buy it and see if it works. So you've got to distinguish between the test tube and the human organism. What in the scientific literature, the hard stuff, distinguishes between a petri dish, a test tube, and a mammal, a rat, a mouse, a pig, a monkey, a human being? Number one. Number two, here's another little catchy one. Let's say you study an herb and the herb's got 10 known benefits because of 10 studies. What you've got to determine is, if the herb says it helps arthritic conditions, if the herb says it helps the pain of arthritis, you have to determine how often it does that. If it helps arthritis 8 out of 10 times, well, that's impressive. If it helps concentration 1 out of 10 times, that's way less impressive. But when you read the claims made by the manufacturers, or the articles that are written, it's not going to make that distinction. It's going to say, this herb will help your sexual function. This herb will help your brain. This herb will help your immune system. It's not going to say, it helps sexual function 9 out of 10 times. It helps concentration 1 out of 10 times. It helps your immune system 3 out of 10 times. It will not qualify the relative benefits of the herbs. So when you study adaptogenic herbs, you have to think in terms of the in vivo, in vitro effects. You have to think in terms of the relative benefits of the herbs. You have to think in terms of the source of the herb. You have to think in terms of how you get the herb into your body. Very important considerations. That's an infinite cry. That is a galaxy away from what you hear generally on radio, which is, I have this herb, it's a great herb. I've got people saying it's a great herb. The studies show it's a great herb. Here's a bunch of $10 words that testify to the individual isolates of these herbs. And because we know these $10 words, that validates the scientific claim for the herb. That really has nothing to do with it. Herbalists don't use herbs the way Hollywood sells the herbs. They're two completely different things. Which is not to say, don't anybody say, I said, it's bad to talk about herbs on radio shows. Because I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that what the public has to do is get more informed. Because as they get more informed, then you can appreciate the people that actually make the herbs who make better herbs. Ron Teagarden, I think, makes good herbs. Dragon herbs. Bob Marshall from Premier Research Labs. I worked with him for years. He makes fantastic herbs. That is about as honest and intelligent an herbalist, a nutritionist, that the world has seen. So you have people out there talking about herbs who have real knowledge, clinically and otherwise, who've given their life to selling them. What it demands is a more educated public to distinguish between guys like that, companies like that, and some of the garbage that's sold on the shelves of American health food stores. So I'm only going to praise, I'm not going to knock, but what I am going to ask you, the American public, to do is get smarter about your purchase. And I think that's reasonable. Next thing about herbs. The next thing about herbs. What science likes to do, and the mushrooms, reishi, shiitake, maitake, coriolis, what science likes to do is isolate the active component. Now, here's where science is a little pretentious. I mean, it's good-willed, good intention, but they end up being pretentious because they think they can go in and figure out just what part of the molecule works. And once they do, and the classic, I think, mistake is this with the beta-D-glucan in mushrooms. It's similar to the mistake, and I think we should all heed this mistake, that Linus Pauling made with ascorbic acid. Ascorbic acid is not vitamin C. And Linus Pauling gave many years of his genius to conferring validating, to authenticating the benefit of ascorbic acid to the immune system and so on and so forth. But what he found out later, what everybody found out later, is that there was a larger molecule engulfing ascorbic acid. And of course, that was the flavonoid, the bioflavonoids. The power of the vitamin C is in the larger molecules. Science just went in this case, Pauling, who was extremely honest, sincere. He was a genius. And he was well-intentioned, but he just didn't know. You can't know everything. Tesla and Einstein didn't know everything, neither did Newton. No one knows everything. He just didn't know. So out of his research was him and Morishige and everybody, vitamin C drips, vitamin C injections, ascorbic acid. Ascorbic acid breaks down to dihydroascorbic acid, and at a certain point, it's a free radical. It's as damaging as it is benefiting. Well, we did the same thing with the mushroom. There's something in the mushrooms called beta-D-glucan. And this recognizes receptor sites on the macrophages and a few other immune system cells. And it enhances the aggressivity of the NK cell and of the macrophage. That's why these mushrooms upregulate the immune system. Of course, what science wants to do is come in and pull out the beta-D-glucan, concentrate it, and not feed you wild reishi, but feed you beta-D-glucan. And all your American, your Douglas Labs, your Progressive Labs, your Metagenics, Standard Processes, all the people that sell supplements that have boards of chemists and biochemists that are looking for new markets, dabble in this stuff. They don't really have a lot of clinical knowledge. In other words, they're not the guys that work in the trenches with people who have health concerns. They have a smattering of that. They've got good credentials, and they have an interest in creating a company that will sell a better, more active form of the herb. But they have this isolate thing where they take the active component out. I don't recommend it. I don't recommend it because I trust nature. What we want to do is comprehend nature and copy it. Comprehend nature and hopefully enhance it. But above and beyond, this is what it comes down to. If you work with the people who work in the trenches, with people who have health concerns, they're going to get the wild herb every single time. They're going to tell you, I want the wild herb. They're not going to tell you they want the herb that's grown in some farmhouse somewhere. They're not going to tell you they want the isolate concentrated in some sort of capsule. They're not going to tell you they want it injected. They're going to tell you, go into the woods, find the herb, right season, right harvest, right species, right preparation, and then we start to talk about application. Now, there are people out there in the United States in their 60s, 70s, 80s that have given 30, 40, 50 years of their life to doing nothing but either growing or harvesting herbs. If you get to know these kinds of people, they will talk this way. And I assure you, my investigations over 25 years tell me that there are much better returns that way. And again, it's back to one of the themes of my show, and that is copy nature. Comprehend it and then facilitate it. Don't interrupt it. When you go in and you pull out an isolate, you're interrupting nature. Now, if you've got an argument against that, well, if you can show result, if you can really show result, well, then we have something to think about. White willow bark is an herb. The Germans took the active components of white willow bark and patented it, and that became aspirin. Aspirin does a lot of what... Aspirin is a fantastic pain reliever. Aspirin's even better than white willow bark most of the time. So if you want to interrupt nature, if you want to alter nature for commercial profit, and that is certainly what the birth of aspirin was about, and you can show better result, fantastic. But the isolates from herbs, isolating the active component of an herb, often botches. And beta-D-glucan and what we've done to the adaptogens, people trying to isolate active components of adaptogenic herbs are messing with something that's much bigger than they ever imagined. The adaptogens have mystical powers. The adaptogens, if you study Chinese medicine, if you study Vedic medicine, they talk about conferring magical, miraculous levels of health to people. And I mentioned this before. Now, is that true? Is that just, well, I'll give you this one. Do you laugh at versions? Do you laugh at the Bible when it says Moses lived to 900? Do you laugh at the Old Testament, Genesis, when it talks about there were giants in those days, so to speak? Are you a literalist? Personally, I'm a literalist. I believe what's said. I take it literally. If Moses lived to 900, I think he lived to 900. I mean 900 modern day years. Not that they counted by tens back then and he only lived to 90. No, he lived to 900. He was doing something different. So if you go into some of these other cultures, whether it's Indian, I mean East Indian, India, or China, and you translate out of ancient scripture, you find things like reishi, soma, ginseng, deer antler, cordyceps, ashwagandha, rhodiola. They suggest that the men and women that used them in those days, when time began, even less than time began, even 200 years ago, that there was a possibility to get magical power out of the herb. And of course, this is how these herbs are often marketed. Ron Teagarden was famous for talking about the mystical power of these herbs. He was a fascinating lecturer. And question is, was it the truth? Well, here's a perspective. I want to give you a perspective. And the perspective is that anytime these herbs affect the glandular system, the endocrine system, you cannot separate the endocrine system from the neuro part of the endocrine system. In other words, the neurological component of the gland. A gland is not just a gland. An adrenal gland is not an adrenal gland. A hypothalamus is not a hypothalamus. A pituitary, a thymus, a thyroid, a testicle, an ovary is not the gland. It is the gland in conjunction, in reciprocity, in balance with the nervous system that's tied into the gland. This changes everything. It changes everything. And it's concepts like these that gives you a really good reason to listen to this show. Because these concepts are large. Doctor told me my thyroid's low. Doctor told me my adrenals are low. Doctor told me my estrogen is low. Doctor told me my testosterone is low. What can I do for my testosterone? What can I take for my thyroid? You see, this is a travesty. The doctor didn't tell you your thyroid was low. He didn't tell you your testosterone was low. He said to you that your testes, in conjunction with your other glands, in conjunction with your neurological system, in conjunction with the rest of your health, isn't up to snuff. That is what he said. Now, if you want to whittle that, marginalize it, if you want to compress that into doctor told me to take Synthroid or some herb for my adrenals or maca for my testosterone, if you want to compress what I just said to that, I wish you well. If you don't get result, I suggest you listen to this show again and really take in what I'm saying to you. Now, this statement, this perspective is not as important when you talk about milk thistle and turmeric and garlic and cayenne and chanca piedra and uva ursi and aloe and the rest of it. But when you talk about the adaptogens, when you talk about God's gifts offering potentially the universe of health, well, you got to hear it this way then. These herbs affect the glandular system in synergy with what you do to purify yourself neurologically. To purify yourself neurologically. I will guarantee you, whatever Moses was ingesting back then, it was in communion with a real relationship with the heavens. And I'll guarantee you, Moses thought, ate, lived, acted, walked it in a way that kept his body electric in an ecosystem where he could draw current from. So we've got two things to think about before these herbs are going to bestow upon us these wonderful glandular benefits. Number one, are you, John Q. Public, are you building your health through some internal practice? And by that, I mean yoga, qigong, tai chi, kung fu, ancient dance, whatever. Some form of martial art. Some form of prayer. Some more dynamic aspect of Bible study. Some form of song. Some advanced, godly, divine, sacred, therapeutic exercise that you regularly participate in to balance yourself through the autonomic nerves, parasympathetic, sympathetic. If you're sympathetic dominant, these adaptogens do not work. Believe me, I know. The amount of adaptogenic herbs I have seen people take, even that I have given to them, the amount, the dosages, the massive amounts. And when these people are John Q. Stress, when they are sympathetic dominant, they will always say, I don't feel anything. All of these. You name the herb, you name the claim. Stressed people rarely get the benefit. If you're skilled and sophisticated enough to understand what sympathetic dominant means and what stress means, and if you watch people create relationship with these herbs, take these herbs in large quantities, when they're under enormous levels of stress, when they're burned out, the herbs don't work. Those people will not tell you, yeah, I feel a benefit. You can give them 100 capsules a day. You can give them half a bottle a day. They'll basically say, I feel jittery and it doesn't make me feel good. They'll say, I don't feel anything. They will disagree. They will confound the claims made about the wondrous benefits of these herbs, because when you're sympathetic dominant, you don't get them. Moses was not sympathetic dominant. The monks, the priests, the scholars who use these herbs use them in calm, pristine ecosystems. They build healthy lives. They work to balance the autonomic nerves in ecosystems that are pure. They live in clean places. Go live in a relatively clean place. Go develop a practice, Tai Chi, Qigong, Kung Fu, Yoga, one that really gives you benefit. When you take herbs, adaptogens, in those circumstances, you will see real benefit. So the context in which you take these herbs is critical, the context. So one, sourcing of the herb from wild to a tablet, big issue. Number two, the claim that the herb is made is a relative claim. 90% improvement for concentration, 10% for sex function. You have to clarify that as you get involved in these herbs. This whole notion that science can take out and isolate and make it better, this is a little bit audacious sometimes. Number four, you have to train your body to receive the herb. The question is, will you work for the herb? The question is not, does the herb work for you? The herb does not want to work for you. The herb wants you to work for the herb. You want to see the powers, the mystical powers of the adaptogen. You want to use them as part of your health practice. You have to work up to it. You have to purify your chemistry so that the deeper chemistries, the chemistries we don't even understand, the chemistries we don't have the technologies to understand, will begin to roll out and bestow unto you, hard worker that you are, the mystical power of the herb. This is what we overlook when we talk about herbs. If you're new to the show, welcome. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. I have a health practice here in Costa Mesa. If you're lost in the labyrinth of trying to remedy your health concerns, resolve your patterns, if you need to get put on a health program, a comprehensive, diverse one that takes all things into account, you call this number, 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007. Give that number a call. That's my office. Speak to my wonderful staff. Come in and see us and get on with it. Take one little step. It's not complicated. It's not as scary as you think. It's what you came here to do. We're talking about systems that need to work in collusion. Systems that need to work in synergy with wild-grown adaptogenic herbs so you can see the power of those herbs. What systems? The dural system. What systems? The flow of the cerebral spinal fluid. What systems? The autonomic nervous system. What systems? The glandular system. What systems? Your osseous alignment. that your spine has enough flexibility to pull upon the nerve plexuses that just sit in front of it. These are systems. There are systems in the body, dural system, the ventricular system, the pineal and hypothalamic pituitary system, the autonomic nervous system. These systems have to be studied, ignited, and then put in unison with what comes out of the earth in the name of the adaptogenic herb. Yes, that's a lot to hear. So get on the website, straighttalk.cc, not .com. That's with two T's, .cc, not .com. And listen to the show again. And listen to the show again. Because this show is different. If you can take in these concepts, you'll find the God that's there. There's God in herbal medicine. There's God in the healing journey. But you have to put the pieces together. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.